Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
This is Michael W. Dean with yet another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, or also known as The Gumbos. And today on The Gumbos, we have Kelly Voluntarist coming all the way from the Free Talk Live studios in Keene, New Hampshire, that Ian has been nice enough to let us utilize. And how are you doing today, Kelly?
Doing well. Thank you, Michael.
Excellent. So, a lot of people that know you as someone who takes off their clothes at airports, but I'm sure there's, and we'll get to that, but there's a lot more to you than that. What should people know about you? And if you want something to focus on, your journey to liberty and how you came to be what you are today.
Well, I've been involved with the ideas of liberty for a very long time. I think I first became interested in the ideas probably as a teenager.
How old are you? Can I ask?
I'm 32. So I originally became interested in the ideas of liberty through reading the works of Ayn Rand, such as Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. And it certainly had a major impact on me. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Are you getting weepy at the thought of Ayn Rand?
No. I've lived the principles of liberty for a long time, and they've certainly been a major influence in my life. So, yeah.
What were you like before you read Ayn Rand?
I was pretty much the same natural-born anarchist.
I kind of was, too. And I don't know if I prefaced you on this or not, but the Anarchy Gumbos is kind of like an interview, but it's kind of like a conversation. And all that basically means different from an interview is I'll say a whole bunch of stuff instead of just going yes and asking the next question. I'll go blah 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 to your blah 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 and
great.
Yeah. So great. Blah blah. Yeah.
Blah blah.
Yeah. Are you a gun person?
I used to be a gun person. I used to carry, I used to go out shooting. Really, I would say that since I've moved here to Keene in the Shire, that I've become a lot more peaceful, and I don't think that I would carry a gun any longer.
Do you think it's unpeaceful to carry a gun?
No, not at all, and I'm really glad when other people do. I just don't, it's just not for me anymore.
Well, you're also around a lot of people who carry guns who would probably jump up to defend you there.
Yes, so that's fantastic.
It's probably less, I don't know if needed would be the word, but yeah, I guess needed. You know, like I personally, my wife and I moved to Wyoming from California basically because we couldn't legally carry a gun in California. And in Los Angeles, you kind of need to carry a gun. It's kind of unsafe not to. And here you can carry a gun, and in New Hampshire you can carry a gun, but it's a lot less dangerous. There's a lot less crime in both places than there are in California, in cities
absolutely.
In California.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm from Phoenix myself. I moved here in the beginning of December from Phoenix, and it's certainly a lot different. I actually began carrying, I think when I was about 23, I was actually held up at gunpoint. And that's when I first started to get into guns and all that kind of stuff. But like I said, I've since given that up. So
that's weird. I don't know many people that are gun people and then stop. I'm interested in exploring that more.
Like I said, I've become a lot more peaceful. I study doctrines of nonviolence, of just dealing with things in another way. I no longer have the anger, and I just don't feel it's right for me anymore.
Huh.
That's interesting that you say that people don't normally, begin as gun people and then leave that. Can you expound a little bit more upon that?
Well, not putting a value judgment on carrying a gun or not, because there are good people who carry and don't carry, and there are bad people who carry and don't carry.
Oh, of course.
But for me, carrying a gun, and for all my friends who carry a gun, it's part of their of them being libertarian, or of being voluntarist, of I'm going to take care of myself, and kind of the, I figure if you live by the non-aggression principle, what are you going to do if someone aggresses on you? You know, I'm not going to curl up in a ball, and I'm not a big guy.
Right.
And I'm kind of old to start learning karate, so I carry a gun.
Right.
40, I'm 47, so I'm
not
gonna, you know, I mean, I could learn karate and in 5 years be able to defend myself efficiently, but what am I going to do for those 5 years? So I guess it's kind of like, you know, you meet a lot of people who start out as, like, say, for instance, small government Republicans and eventually become anarchists, you know, but you never hear someone, almost never hear someone who's the other way, who was like, yes, I studied and understood and believed that there should be no state. And then I read a bunch and decided there needed to be a state, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, the philosophy is quite linear. I mean, it sort of, you know, starts at one end and, you know, you go from statism to, you know, anarchy, I believe anyway.
Right. And I'm not putting a statist or anarchistic value judgment on having a gun or not carrying a gun.
No, me neither.
But the only people I've ever heard of who have gone from regularly carrying a gun to not carrying a gun that I can think of are, I guess, criminals who get busted and then, like, as part of their community service have to go to school. You know, like some rappers who, like T.I., for instance, used to carry a gun for self-defense and got busted with a bunch of guns. And now I hate that he does this. He goes around to schools as part of his community service and tells kids they shouldn't have guns ever.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, he does.
Interesting.
Which, you know,
interesting.
I guess if that's shaving 10 years off a federal prison off your sentence, maybe you could grit your teeth and do it. But I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know that I'd be able to do that. I mean, yeah. I certainly don't. I certainly do not preach against anyone carrying a gun. I believe that carrying is an inherent natural right. Self-defense is an inherent natural right. You know, it seems like sort of in my own journey through liberty, I've become more and more pacifistic in my thinking. And I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at right now. I couldn't picture myself carrying a gun.
What would you do if you were attacked and your friends with guns weren't around?
You know what? I've wondered this. I mean, you know, in the situation of I'm in a situation right now where I'm looking at a couple months in jail. And, you know, I've actually wondered if, you know, if I was to be attacked, I mean, what would I do? I mean, would I react? Yeah,
because you're facing jail time for something else that changes how you'd have to defend yourself?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, whether it be, you know, on the inside or the outside, I do wonder how I would now react. I really think that, you know, and I mean, in my younger years, I was something of a fighter. I mean, if someone, you know, put their hands on me or attacked me, I was ready to fight, and I can defend myself. So I don't really worry that I can defend myself. I wonder if I would.
You mean you might just curl up in a ball and let them hurt you?
I don't know if I would hit back. I think I would like to think that I wouldn't, but I probably would just as sort of a reaction. I don't think that I don't know if I would be able to help myself, but I would like to think that I would react completely nonviolently, although I don't know if I'm quite there yet.
See, I think that there's a difference, and I'm sure you understand this too. I'm just explaining my take on it. I think there's a difference between behaving aggressively and using violence in self-defense. There are some people who even say that physical self-defense, like even to the point of shooting somebody, isn't violent. I would disagree, but I would say it's not aggressive.
I do not believe that. Like I said, self-defense is an inherent natural right. Self-defense is completely moral. I feel that the non-aggression principle and, you know, obviously defending oneself is moral. I sort of strive to go beyond that. So
I've never met anyone like you. That's what I'm
really
saying.
Really?
I've never met anyone who believes self-defense is an inherent right that isn't sure they'd use it if attacked.
Interesting.
Are you religious?
I am.
In what?
I am. You know, I consider myself a Christian anarchist, but I would say that, you know, I derive my...
You dropped out there for a minute after I derive my...
Oh, I'm sorry. I derived my spirituality from, you know, many philosophies such as, you know, Eastern philosophy, you know, even paganism.
I'm sorry. I got to jump in here just because I'm sitting here in the studio and sure. I just have to correct you. I have very similar beliefs as Kelly. So you've now met two people that that have similar philosophical beliefs when it comes to the use of violence.
Okay. Yeah. There might
and
be
the
a lot
freedom,
of,
by the way.
There might be a lot of people that have that, but it's not a topic that comes up a lot. And I think I'm going to try to find out exactly what all interviewees believe about self-defense in the
right on.
From
you know, on. I like the viewpoint that when you hurt somebody else, you're just hurting yourself because yeah. I think that everything's interconnected.
Yeah.
Not me. I want to crush my enemies like a bug. No, I'm kidding.
You know,
all right, I'll shut up now.
I remember. That's okay. Thank you for participating, Ian.
If Kelly's fine with you jumping in from time to time, I'm fine with it too.
Feel free. I'm sorry. What was I going to say?
Talking about your religion or your philosophy.
That's right. You know, it's certainly been an evolution. Like I said, I haven't always been this nonviolent. It surprises me. I mean, it really surprises me that I no longer have that anger. So I prefer to deal with people with empathy and compassion, and you know, try to understand where they're coming from. And you know, I feel that you know they're angry and they're upset. And when someone is angry and upset, you know, it really only hurts them. And so I try to feel compassion for them and to pity them. Even though sometimes it is difficult when they do things like, you know, run my friend off the road on his bicycle, as happened here in Keene a few weeks back with Derek Jay, another liberty activist.
Well, that's an arm of the state, and I have a hard time thinking of arms of the state as human, but that's just me.
Oh, there's people in there somewhere, Michael.
I know.
There's people in there somewhere, and you know, nothing's going to get better until you know we can sort of access the humanity.
To me, it all comes back to, you know, the Nazis saying I was just following orders. I mean, it's the same thing. The DEA, the cop on the corner, they're all just feeding their family with their tyranny.
Well, I believe that, you know, and I'm half Jewish, and my on my father's side, my grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I think that in those days, I think the Jews reacted passively. You know, have you ever read any Gandhi?
No, but I've read some Solzhenitsyn, which is where I was going to go.
According to Gandhi. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, Solzhenitsyn basically wondered why some of the Jews didn't just beat the SS over the head with candlesticks when they came in the door, and said if enough of them did that, it would have stopped. But,
right.
You know.
Right. Well, to me, that would be better than what happened, because what I see as what happened was complete and total, passive. I'm a lack of defending oneself.
I'm a member of Jews for the Preservation of Firearm Ownership, who I think are mm-hmm. pretty much the only, other than the Wyoming Gun Owners Association, they're the only gun organization I think really has any balls. And mm-hmm. you know, they don't back Romney like the NRA does, and mm-hmm. their whole thing is, you know, they are Jews whose parents or grandparents were killed in the Holocaust or were in mm-hmm. the Holocaust, and they're like, we will never forget, and that's why we fucking have guns.
Right. Well, I believe that, you know, I believe that violent resistance is more moral than doing nothing. I do not believe that a complete and total lack of self-defense is not right. You don't just lay down and take it. However, I believe that a nonviolent resistance is more moral, obviously, than violent resistance.
Are you thinking of the Gandhi quote, he who cannot protect himself or his nearest and dearest or their honor by nonviolently facing death may and ought to do so by violently dealing with the oppressor. He who can
exactly.
do neither is the two of the burden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He also actually said if someone comes to shoot, I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something like if someone comes to shoot you or your family, it would make sense to shoot back, which is often quoted by gun folks. But he actually went on to say, and a lot of gun folks don't quote this part of, you know, it would make sense, and especially if you could shoot them in the leg and not in the heart. And I'm thinking like, well, that's kind of a misunderstanding of self-defense, but
right.
Just because shooting someone in the leg probably won't right. stop them, it'll probably make them kill you quicker.
Right. Right. I mean, if you're going to carry a gun, and if you're going to shoot a gun, you have to shoot to kill.
Or shoot to stop, which involves right. hitting parts of the body that can kill. Yeah.
Right. Right.
What
well,
yeah. did you hear about Ted Nugent getting called on by the Secret Service today for what he said about Obama?
No.
Which, you know, my joke is with the Secret Service is who's going to bring the hookers, Ted or the SS? But no, he said at an NRA convention the other day, he said, if Obama gets another term within a year, I'm going to be dead or in prison.
Hmm.
Which people take as he, you know, he's going to go shoot somebody. But
oh, I wouldn't. That would not have been my interpretation. Well,
in the previous sentence, he'd said, in November, we need to ride in and chop off the heads of the Democrats, which he was speaking figuratively about voting, but following that with, I'm going to be dead in a year, you know.
Right. Right. I wouldn't necessarily take that threat of violence.
Would you take it as, you know, we're all going to be in prison for free speech in a year if that happens or something?
That would be more towards the way I would take it. And I mean, there's something to be said for it. I'm right here. They know where I'm at. If they want to come get me, they can come get me anytime. But,
I bug my own house with podcasting.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, publicity is the best defense. The camera is the new gun. That's what I believe.
Have you heard that song, Film the Police, that's a takeoff on Shoot the Police? I mean, not Shoot the
Police. No, I haven't. I haven't heard that.
It's a great song. It's I forget who it's by, but it's a remake of that old song with different lyrics, basically about filming cops.
That is great. That's great. I really like that a lot.
Yep.
I really like that. Yeah.
So, Yeah.
Interesting. I wasn't aware that my views were so unique.
Maybe they're not. I mean, you know, out of the two people sitting in the room you're in, how many people are sitting? Are there more than two?
No.
Okay, there's two people sitting in the room and both of you have the same ideas. I just, it doesn't come up a lot. I think people don't ask that question. You know, it's either you're a gun person or you're not. And then if you are, they talk about guns. And if you're not, they talk about something else. So they talk about the Federal Reserve. But
right. Right.
One of the most interesting answers I got so far, everyone I've interviewed on this cast, I've asked, this is my side cast. I do the Freedom Fiends with Nima. And then this is my side project doing interviews. And I asked Stephanie Murphy if she was a gun person. And she said, I believe in people's right to self-defense. And I have shot guns before. And I said, do you carry a gun? And she said, I'm not going to answer that in public, which I thought was a really cool answer. It's kind of a good strategic answer, regardless of whether she does or not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you, yeah.
Go
ahead. You took off your clothes at the airport.
Back to that again, huh?
Well, that's how I first knew about you. I mean, you said awesome. Cameras are the new guns, and it got my attention because it got a lot of people's attention, and I've never seen it done. And I've thought about that before I ever heard of you. I was like, you know, they're pushing people so hard at the airport, someone's just going to take off all their clothes in protesting. So how did that come about, and what came out of it?
Well, actually, a girlfriend of mine did something similar, and I believe it was the Seattle airport probably about a year and a half ago. And she actually did it while flying, and you know, back when we don't fly, and the whole opt out day really took off. This was
when George Donnelly got called a terrorist for telling people on The View for saying that people shouldn't go to airports. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Whoopi Goldberg called him a terrorist on national television.
Oh my God, you're kidding me. That's terrible. No. That's, you know, I mean, terrorist is a word that's just thrown around just way too often. It's completely ridiculous. You know, the TSA, obviously, you know, in and of itself, by its own definition, is it violates people's rights.
I'd call it a terrorist organization, but I'd say that most of what the government does would fall under the government statute of RICO, you know, of organized crime.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the TSA, basically, you know, I feel that all government regulation of travel is just such a horrible violation of, you know, our rights and of our, you know, the reason we're here, as far as I'm concerned, the reason we're here on Earth is to, you know, we're here to live free, we're here to thrive, and we're here to create, and we're here to, you know, do better and move the human race forward. I believe that all the regulations on travel are, they hold that back. It holds that back, and that
most of what the government does holds things back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you wanted to talk about the TSA, Michael.
No, I want to talk about naked women in public.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, the reactions that I've been to the Manchester airport, I believe, three times, and then I recently took a trip to Philadelphia and went to the Philadelphia airport, where the Department of Homeland Security actually followed me around. Yeah.
Did they know your name? Did they take down your name or anything like that?
Oh, they knew. They knew exactly who I was.
So you were flying. You were flying that day?
No. I'd flown in a few days before, and I went down there with Nicholas Shankin, James Babb, Mike Malloy, and they all you know work within the Liberty movement in Philly. No, I went there specifically to take off my clothes at the airport, and I had a publicly designated meeting place, you know, at the Marriott bar at the Philly airport. And when I walked in, the whole place was just crawling with cops. I was like, oh wow,
because you were there, or they
yes,
were there anyway.
They were there for me.
Oh, because you'd like announced it on the internet that
yes.
you're gonna do it.
Yes, they were there for me. I was like, oh, shit. This could be bad. But they didn't do anything, as they've never done anything at the Manchester airport. They simply followed me around. There's a picture on my Facebook with about, you know, five or six officers standing behind me. I'm like, yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. Philly is obviously much more of a police state.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Were you naked, or were you in bra and panties, or how far naked were you?
I was sort of in a one-piece sort of little outfit.
I thought I saw one where you were in bra and panties.
I was in bra and panties in one, and then I think I was in a one-piece outfit in Philly. One time, I decided to wear like this sort of mesh top and, you know, put tape over my nipples and we actually wear jeans and boots, and the reaction I got, even though I was actually probably more covered up than normal, was very different, because obviously, you know, my breasts were exposed, and it was definitely interesting to see the different reactions.
Well, isn't there a saying, I think it was Mae West maybe, said, there's nothing as naked as a half-dressed woman. Yeah, I guess so. Groucho Marx, I forget one of them.
I'm not sure. I've never heard that quote, but it was interesting to see the different reactions with exposed breasts and non-exposed breasts. I was like, wow. Up to when I decided to go to the airport, you know, like that, basically topless in jeans, I'd seen some women from the Ukraine in Europe protesting topless. And I mean, they were outside. I think it was the World Economic Forum in Davos, and you know, they're pretty serious out there. They're getting dragged off by government agents, and it was definitely pretty intense.
So you did not get arrested?
I did not get arrested. I have not been arrested taking my clothes off.
What have you been arrested for recently that you're facing 2 months in jail for?
I am facing 2 months in jail for a trespassing at the Superior Court here in Keene. How one can trespass at a public court building?
This was during work hours. It wasn't after dark, or
no, it was during work hours. I'll tell you how it all started was that me and some other activists, Ian here and few others, we were singing peace carols during the holidays outside the Cheshire County Superior Court. And I believe it started actually when myself and Jason Talley were arrested for not standing up for Judge Arnold. And
Standing when told to stand in court.
Yes, not standing when told to stand in court. Jason Talley and I were both arrested for that. And a particularly aggressive bailiff, his name is Bob Tebow, a little old troll of a man. He actually dragged Tally off in handcuffs. I walked. Getting dragged off isn't really my style of activism, but we were both arrested. And during the afternoon while we were in jail, Ademo and Ian and a couple other people went to the courthouse and, started asking the bureaucrats questions as they were leaving work. Like, hey, how do you feel about, Tebow dragging off someone and throwing them in a cage for not standing for the judge? And that's sort of how it all started. Then we started, like I said, singing peace carols outside, standing in the parking lot. And I guess some of the bureaucrats didn't like this too much. They feel that people filming them is a form of aggression. And yeah, it's so ridiculous, right? So ridiculous.
They film us all the time.
Of course.
Everywhere.
But that's different. They have extra rights. Didn't you know that?
You know, I had a thought.
Come on now.
I have a thought. I want to turn you and Ian on to, and anybody who is an activist who does it through the courts, as you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with this idea, and this sounds like, sovereign citizen, half-baked court magic word stuff. And it's, it might be, but I think it's solid. I don't know if any court would go for this, but I think it would get good press. There's a legal term I came across called an illusory promise, which is a contract that cannot be enforced by a court because either it doesn't offer anything in return. You know, a legal contract has to be tit for tat, or it says something like the terms of this contract can be changed at any time, which is not legal in a contract, even though people do it all the
Interesting.
Time. Interesting. So I was thinking, I think that the social contract, the so-called social contract, is an illusory promise because the terms of it can change and do at any time. I mean, it's really an immoral contract because you're born into signing it. But if they're going to say, well, that's a given, I could say that you could argue that in that it's an illusory promise because the taxes and laws change at whim.
Right.
I think someone should argue that in court, man, with a lawyer.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. Well, obviously, it's all totally arbitrary. Men in robes and men with badges can do whatever the hell they want. And that's not right. And like you just alluded to, I never entered into any contract. I mean, the way I see it is that, people want to have government, people want to do this, people want to do that. That's fine. I just want the option to opt out. Well, I don't want anything to do with it.
You're a terrorist because you're talking like that, according to, everything they're saying now. I'm really curious.
I'm a peace terrorist.
I'm really curious if Ted Nugent's going to go to jail. I'm looking at a new CNN article that posted a few minutes ago called "Ted Nugent Should Be in Jail."
Oh Lord, he better never leave his house with a cam without a camera.
I don't know, man. He's so status. Live stream. Though. I mean, he could almost be a liberty guy, but he's stuck in this like constitutional Republican versus Democrat crap, and he's pro war and pro war on drugs. But
right,
he used to make some good music about 160 years ago. I liked him when
that
I was a kid.
Long ago.
Yeah,
well, how old are you, Michael?
I'm 47.
Right on. Wasn't that long ago?
But then. It's in cat years. It's 146 years ago.
Okay, I get it. Cool, awesome. Are you a cat person?
Yeah, there's several in this room. Let me see.
Okay.
You know, they say the Second Amendment. I like Ted Nugent's definition of the Second Amendment. He says the right to keep and bear arms means I've got some on me right now. And if you, which I usually do. So if you ask me if I'm a cat person, I'm going to be like, yeah, there's only if there's some in this room, and there are some in this room.
I love cats.
I love them too.
I love pets. They're so, like, anyways, the trespassing at Superior Court. Back to that. So when we all started to go sing peace carols, singing is aggression, filming is aggression. You know, you see how these people think. But we were all served with no trespass orders at the Superior Court, which unfortunately means that we cannot attend the trials of our friends. Which is,
doesn't that violate the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution of the United States?
I believe that it absolutely does. And
not that I'm a constitutionalist, but you know, that's the rules. They're supposed to be playing by those rules, so you can bring them up.
It's the rules. It's the rules of the system that they're forcing me to participate in. That's the way I see it. And I'm seriously considering filing civil suit against them in federal court. I feel that my rights were violated terribly. We were banned in, I think, the beginning of January from the Superior Court. And I think it was probably, you know, maybe a month and a half later, Ian got some paperwork back in the mail about a name change request that he'd filed in their, you know, little system. You have to do it their way, else you don't get your wishes granted. And, I wanted to file similar paperwork. So, Ian was trying to get a hold of, the sheriff here. The sheriff's name here is actually Dick Foot, Richard Foot.
I've heard that.
Yes, we have a Dick Foot, a Dick Head, and a Dick Tracy in the in the New Hampshire government. You know, we got a lot of Dick in the New Hampshire government. It's really amazing.
A lot of Dick body part. Dick / body part.
All Dick all the time here in New Hampshire. You know, it's forced on us. Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Exactly. So, Ian was trying to get a hold of Dick Foot because the no trespass order specified that if we actually had, you know, legitimate business at the court, that we had to contact Dick Foot and ask permission. So after several tries, Ian was unable to get a hold of Dick Foot. The weekend, the Monday after Liberty Forum, I believe it was, Carlos Miller from Photography Is Not a Crime was visiting us here in Keene. So we decided it would be, you know, since we had the extra backup with the publicity, obviously, we figured that it would be the best time to, go to the Superior Court and try to, you know, handle this legitimate business that we had. And unfortunately, upon walking into the building, we were told to walk through the security gate, and we were both arrested and taken to the cage in the basement of the Cheshire County Security
Courthouse.
So
how are you supposed to do any business that you are supposed to do at the courthouse now?
That's a really good question. It's quite difficult. Now when we have to file papers at the Superior Court, we actually have to call up and, someone has to come out and take the paperwork.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that could be the basis of a lawsuit of some sort of banning from, things you're paying for.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I got a question for you, you and Ian, regarding name changes. I know that to legally change your name in most places, part of it involves publishing your intent to do so in a paper of the community. Would mentioning your plans to do so on Free Talk Live fit the description of a media outlet in the community, or do you have to pay the local paper?
Well, I don't have any idea what their legal rules are as far as changing names. I did find that there was somebody sent me some sort of Supreme Court case in New Hampshire that says that you can change your name just by changing your name. Like legally, you're supposed to be able to do that so long as it's not for fraudulent purposes. And so that's what I've done. I mean, as of a couple of years ago, I just started using Ian Freeman as my name. And the courts and the government guys don't really like that. And they don't care about what their own Supreme Court has to say. You can cite that opinion to them and they just don't care. So they, you know, said that there's like this probate court process that you have to go through if you want the courts to use a, you know, some other name besides your given legal birth name. And so that's what I had gone to the probate court to do that day, was to follow up on some paperwork. They won a $90 fee and I refused to pay into the system. So they had denied my motion for the name change or the filing. And I'd come there with the intention to offer to pay the fee to a local charity rather than to the court. And that was my intention on that particular day. But beyond that paperwork, I'm not aware of any such requirements here in New Hampshire.
Yeah. I'm not aware of any of their little rules and you know, regulations. You know, all I know is that I'm tired of, and I'm sure my father is also tired of them dragging my family's name through the mud. Therefore, I was going to legally
have a new name for them to drag through the mud.
Well, I'm simply going to legally change my name to Kelly Voluntarist. Why not, right? They had other ideas. Obviously, they did not want to allow me to do the file the necessary paperwork I had to file, and I still to this day have not been able to do so.
You brought up your dad. I'm curious how your now. I bring it up because I'm thinking, like, I've said, my mother died about 12 years ago, and I'm thinking, like, my mother would hate everything I'm doing. My dad kind of likes it because he's a constitutionalist, and he thinks that I'm still that, and he's 91 and hasn't really listened to when I've explained to him. Right. I've got him to vote for Ron Paul, which is a major step because he voted for Nixon and backed him. But
oh, wow.
But I still can't get him to agree that the war on drugs is a bad idea and should be abolished even if you don't take drugs. And he doesn't really know the full extent of what I do because it would take too long to explain it to him, and his hearing isn't that good. So if I send him links, you know, he can't even figure out how to click on links. But, you know, he kind of likes what I do, but doesn't really understand the full force of it. I think if it made the paper more, he'd be able to read about it and understand it. I'm curious what your family thinks of what you do, if you're willing to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely hate it.
Where are they in your state or somewhere else?
No, my parents and my family lives in Arizona. Like I said, I moved here on December 1st from Arizona, and I, you know, most recently my father has tried to bribe me to move back.
Wow, how much is he offering? What's he offering?
He was telling me that he would be willing to pay off my court fines in Arizona. Currently, I'm wanted in Arizona for failure to pay about $2,000 in court fines for a case that I lost for basically I was convicted of lying to the police, and the state of Arizona claims that I owe them $2,000, and I happen to disagree with this. Therefore, we're sort of in an impasse.
Can you tell me that story? Can you tell us that story?
About lying to the cops?
Yeah.
Well, what happened was that I was my boyfriend at the time and I, we lived in an apartment complex, and basically we went to go somewhere, and his driver's license was suspended, but he always drove anyway. And in Arizona, the cops, especially where we were living in Scottsdale, the police, they know me pretty well out there. And I think they saw my car and they saw us pull out of the apartment complex, and they weren't sure who was driving. I don't know, but we made it across the street to the laundromat before the blue lights were flashing behind us. And, we switched seats there real quick. And when the cop, you know, I had my back window tinted real dark, but when the cop asked me who was driving, I said that I had been driving, and really I should have just said, nothing, I'm not talking to you guys, and I wouldn't have been in trouble at all. But I said that I was driving, and he said that you were under arrest for false reporting to law enforcement. So they threw us both in jail, and we both spent the night in jail. And
you sound like a big threat to society. And, you know, I think a lot of tax money should be spent to keep me safe from you.
Maybe so. I'm a peace terrorist. They don't like that. they don't like the truth. They can't handle it. But So I'm wanted in Arizona for failure to pay that. And
that sounds like a country and western song to me.
Yeah. What does?
I don't know. All these places you're wanted. There's actually a song. There's a song called Wanted Man. Johnny Cash did it. Nick Cave did it. I think Bob Dylan did it too. It's just it's a list of places he's wanted, and he says at the end, the only place I'm not wanted is the place that they call home.
Yeah, that's nice. That's sad. That's not good.
Well, it's a good country and western songs are historically often sad.
Oh, well,
the real ones.
Yeah.
Whereas Tom Petty said,
I definitely feel very wanted. Many jurisdictions want to throw me in their hotel. So yeah, it's a warm and fuzzy feeling, certainly. You know, whatever. We'll see what happens. But my warrant out of Arizona is only extraditable within 25 miles. Thank goodness. I really don't want a state-sponsored trip back to Arizona. In fact, if I never see the place again, I wouldn't be disappointed.
I've got family there, but I have no reason otherwise to go there.
Right.
Isn't there a big Liberty community there, though?
There is a big Liberty community there, and I suppose it would be nice to be able to go back and visit, but, you know, I currently can't because of state threats.
They need a big Liberty community with their Sheriff Arpaio there.
Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the toughest sheriff in America.
The most sociopathic sheriff in America.
He is a mess. Yeah, he is a mess. Sheriff Joe, however, you know, I can thank him because he's inspired a lot of my activism. So, you know, I got to give a shout out to Sheriff Joe. Tell him thanks. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
it's pretty bad. You know, I spent September, this past September here in Keene, and I returned to Arizona for a couple months before I moved back to Keene permanently. But it really struck me the difference, you know, as soon as I got back from Keene, and I'm in Arizona, you know, 5 minutes from where I live, you know, driving around, and God, I just see cops everywhere. It's a police state. It's terrible.
What do you do for work and fun and life in Keene?
I'm a full-time activist.
How's that pay? Does that pay well?
No, liberty activist pay is crap. You know, I make it work. Yeah.
I make about 5 cents an hour at Liberty Activism. I figured it out. I mean, literally, like, I make money at it, finally, after, you know, a couple years of doing it.
That's terrific.
But it's about 5 cents an hour. So I do, like, tech writing and tell people how to use software for a living.
Right on. Yeah. Right on. That's good. It's always good to, you know, be able to support one's own Liberty Activism.
Liberty Activism's more fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's so, you know what? It's so much more fun. And I was just having this conversation actually with an aunt of mine. Well, she's my father's twin's girlfriend, and it was so funny because maybe like about a week ago she starts you know, she turns up on my Facebook. I'm like, wait a second, I saw the name. I'm like, oh, that's Pat. And I'm like, okay, like she's, you know, responding to some of my posts, and she sends me a message, and you know, we've been going back and forth a little bit, and it says, she's like, I don't know if my father sent her to talk to me or what, but I don't know. She says to me, she's like, well, what, you know, what got me, you know, so, you know, interested in activism. And obviously this is a relative that I haven't spoken with in years and years and years and years and years. she asked, you know, what got me so interested in activism. And so, you know, I sent a couple links back to, you know, some of my writings on the internet and some other things on the net. And she comes back and she says, well, wouldn't you like to do something that gives you both satisfaction and a salary? I say, activism gives me satisfaction beyond salary.
How do you pay rent and buy food?
You know, I make ends meet here and there.
Okay.
And I prefer not to answer that question.
Yeah, that's fine.
Plead the fifth.
There you go.
So, you know, but it was just, that's been a strange conversation I've been having on Facebook over the past few days.
So, I was going to call this Kelly Voluntarius Talks About Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. What do you think about that for a topic name for this?
You can call it. You can call it whatever you like, Michael.
Cool, but I was thinking we haven't really talked about sex, drugs, or rock and roll. We talked about Ted Nugent. I guess he was rock and roll about 160 years ago. We talked about him being anti-drugs. That's the only drugs we talked about, and we didn't talk a lot about sex. But you said that you don't mind talking about it, but you don't have much to say on the subject currently. You're married to your activism.
Yeah. I must say, you know, it's relationships are hard when I'm quite dedicated to this movement, and you know, it's really my life, and you know, it makes a relationship with certainly anyone that is not as dedicated to it as I am, which is you know, it makes it difficult, certainly. So you know, I'd been broken up with my last relationship broke up over, you know, so certainly somewhat over my activism, and yeah.
How so? You were married to it and he was jealous?
Something like that, actually. Yeah. We both became you know, he and I were together for a few years, and we both became you know, interested in fighting the state, or as I don't like to say I'm fighting the state any longer. I simply prefer to refer to it as I'm living free, and the state is trying to get in my way, but I just continue to live free.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.fm streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Right on.
My wife was asleep, so I had to get my wank on. Oh, we're right recording. On. What happened here? Yeah, I'm really, really, really happily married, and I...
That's awesome.
I'm not pushing it in anyone's face. I'm just bragging about it.
What does your wife... how does your wife feel about your involvement in the Liberty Movement?
She loves it, but she says I'm the only activist she cares about when I try to tell her about anything else. She is pretty close to an anarchist, if not an anarchist. Mm-hmm. When I met her 7 years ago, she was a Republican and I was a lazy Democrat, and I didn't know she was a Republican, and I would not have married her if I'd known that. It just never came up. That's how apolitical we were. But we did a... We did a kink podcast for a year and a half where we basically had, it was an audio podcast. We basically had sex on it, had really slappy, kinky, filthy sex on it. And then for about 10 minutes. And after we both came about eight times, we would talk about everything in the world, from sex to shoes to cats to rock and roll to little bit of politics.
That's hilarious.
For about an hour and a half.
That podcast too, might I ask, what was the
incredibly
commercial
well.
Success?
It wasn't commercial at all, although we wrote a book together that sold a lot of copies, self-published, straight print to Amazon, called Diary of an S&M Romance by Dalai Lama and Thorn Daddy, which were the names we went by.
Interesting.
That is still up and selling on Amazon. The podcast is no longer anywhere. It was called Submission and Coffee with Dalai Lama, DolLieLlama. And it was the number one kink podcast on iTunes. You know, I meant to ask Ian about this. DJ and I, that's my wife, Deborah Jean, and I we spent our first wedding anniversary at the Pod Expo in Ontario, California. And the year we were there, Free Talk Live, which I'd never heard of and didn't know what it was, won the award for best political podcast. Were you guys there, Ian?
No.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering if I'd met you without remembering.
No, I've never been to any podcasting conventions. I probably should have.
You're
or
lucky.
Should. But I never have. I always felt like I wanted to spend my limited resources on going to the radio conventions.
Yeah.
I know. Call me old media, but, yeah.
Well, It makes sense. It's easier to actually get people to advertise on radio than on podcasting.
Right. It certainly was easier. It probably still is. And maybe that transition will happen someday. Because we certainly have had, companies reach out to us and ask about advertising on the podcast. So I can see that transitioning, but it certainly wasn't at the time at which you're speaking of.
Well, we're actually making a little money on Freedom Fiends, which is why I say, yeah, I do make 5 cents an hour or 25 cents an hour or something, but I work a lot of hours. So it's not my day job yet.
Right.
But, that podcasting expo was kind of really, and I got taken to task by Pod people for saying that, but it was kind of really nerdy and really what I didn't like is it was focused on the technology rather than on what anyone had to say. And the only high point of the event for anybody was when Adam Curry showed up for about 5 minutes. It was like the Pope had come to the Catholics or something. So we had a little problem here, and we went over to the luxurious LRN server rather than the crappy, cheap Freedom Fiend server. It seemed.
You know, somebody was jumping down my throat on the LRN.fm Facebook page because they're upset because we don't have a huge variety of commercials that run during the commercial breaks, which is true. And that's bad. You know, it is bad radio technically to have the same commercial sponsors running over and over and over again. He pointed out that, you know, it really grates on him hearing the same spots and that he's angry at the advertisers now because of it. I mean, I think it's kind of ludicrous, that position, but I guess I understand it. And, you know, it'd be great to have all kinds of like variety of commercials, but there just aren't that many liberty oriented places that have audio ads. I'd run them if they did, if I knew about them. And
I could make
and on top of that, you know, it's a hobby, so I'm not exactly Johnny on the spot going out trying to hit the streets doing sales, and certainly Mark isn't either. He's making money on Free Talk Live, not LRN.
Well, I could make more 30-second comedy pieces for you if you'd play them.
Hey man, if you've got something good, I'll put it on for sure. That's not a problem. But those would only run in our comedy rotator, which wouldn't really increase the frequency at which the other commercials are being displaced. So to have a greater variety of maybe organizations that we could support. But either way, you know, it's like, hey buddy, what do you want for fucking hobby?
Yeah.
I'm doing this thing. I'm pouring thousands of dollars into LRN.fm every year, and you're bitching at me because of the commercial content. Just turn it down if you don't like it.
Well, my answer with that kind of stuff is always, there used to be this band called, well, The Clash actually did it before the big boys did. At the end of a Clash show, at their early shows, they'd say, now go start your own band. And I ended my first movie, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, with now go make your own movie. And I ended my book, $30 Film School, with now go write your own book, or with go make your own movie. And then my other book about writing, I ended with now go write your own book, which to me kind of helps make it critic proof of like, look, man, if you don't like it, go make your own. And it's
they hate
that
it when we tell them that here
they
in Keene.
They hate it.
They hate it. There's so many people out there that have their ideas of what we should be doing as far as activism is concerned, or they're upset at Kelly for stripping at the airport, or they're upset at me and Derek for recording some crazy old traffic lady attacking Derek, or whatever it is their critiques are. And we love, you know, the answer I love is, and I learned this from Russell Canning over at NHFree.com, one of the activists that inspired me to come up here, was whenever somebody throws an idea out there, you return to them with, you should do that.
Yeah.
Because, hey, you know, I've already got all kinds of activism stuff I'm doing and other things for work and et cetera that I have my hands full of. Mm-hmm. Maybe you do have a really great idea, in which case you should do that. Yeah. But they really get upset about it because what they want is for us to do what they want.
Yes.
And to behave in the way they want.
Yes.
Here's what I'll say about that. How many shows and podcasts are there on LRN.fm?
Including the podcasts, couple dozen.
Okay. Out of 24, 25, 20? Something like that.
I don't know. 20.
Out of that many, there are two. I won't name them, but there are two I don't like. And there's nothing bad about the two I don't like. You know, they're totally into the non-aggression principle. I'm glad they exist. They promote liberty. But I personally, when they come on, I go do something else because I don't like listening to them. I think that's a quality problem, that there's enough liberty media out there that out of 24 or 25, there's a couple that don't appeal to me. But yeah, there's 20 or 23 that I love, you know.
Without knowing which ones they are, I would probably feel the same way. I mean, I generally, as the program director of the station, because I pointed out, it's a hobby, I'm not listening too closely to the content. I'm doing, you know, business during the day. I'm doing activism during the day. I'm doing my show at night. And so really, I mean, I have my favorites and others that, you know, they're good for what they are, and there's an audience for them. Like, yeah. I added the shows because I know, like, the people that listen to Stefan Molyneux are maybe a little more highbrow, and the people listening to Wheels Off Liberty, not so much.
Right.
And I like Wheels Off Liberty. You know, I think that's a hilarious show, and you know, some people, it's not their speed, and that's okay. Right. Like, that's the whole idea behind the network, is to present multiple choices for people and options so people can find something they can enjoy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's what they call a Cadillac problem, to have the problem be there's so much stuff out there that I can actually discern, well, I don't like this enough to listen to it. Now, I'll put it this way. If those two that I don't like were the only ones in the world, I'd listen to them 24/7. You know?
Right on.
It's like if I used to live in a town – I lived in this town called Jamestown, New York. I went to college there. There was nothing to do on weekends. There were no bands. And then this little band started playing at the local club. They were called 10,000 Maniacs. And I didn't like the band very much, but they were more interesting than sitting at home and watching Saturday Night Live. So I saw 10,000 Maniacs 70 or 80 times over three or 4 years in clubs.
Did they start to grow on you?
Yeah, they kind of did. But they were something to do. And now I would never, and it's not because they got popular. It's just I didn't really like them, but they were something to do in my town. And apparently a lot of people liked them because they got really big. But
interesting.
But it was something to do.
So they didn't totally grow on you then. So after 70 or 80 times, weren't like, hey, well, I just love 10,000 Maniacs. Can't get enough of them.
I guess I'm going to sound like a snob, and I'm going to say that my favorite album by them is the independent record they put out before they got signed to Elektra that nobody's ever heard. And that's not being a snob. That's just they had more of an edge then. They were harder and more tribal, and I liked them more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. So there we talk about rock and roll.
Commercialization tends to ruin things, you know.
So I guess that's rock and roll. I don't know. Ted Nugent's more rock and roll. But we talked about rock and roll. We talked about sex a little bit. We didn't talk about drugs.
Oh, gosh. Just so much to say, you know? So many drugs, so little time. No, just kidding.
I don't do drugs. I feel about drugs the way you do about guns.
You're right.
Which means I used to be really into drugs, and I haven't done them since, like, 1994. I don't even drink,
That's probably pretty close to my feelings about them. You know, I've certainly done more than my fair share of drugs, and
what is anyone's fair share, though? What really is one's fair share?
Whatever one's fair share is, I have done more than my fair share.
Ayn Rand would say whatever you can afford is your fair share.
I mean, whatever you can afford, I, gosh, I then then I guess I did my fair share plus. Yeah, you know, I've definitely done my share of drugs. It's not a, you know, it's not what I choose to do. I feel, you know, if something forwards your life, you know, go ahead, go for it. But if something is not, you know, if something's not enhancing your goals, if something is detracting from them, then it's probably time to go ahead and reconsider your actions.
I got a good question for you.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
If all your goals with activism were met, you know, let's say it became Libertarian Paradise or LibPair, as we call it at Freedom Fiends. If it became LibPair, you know, before you're too old to see and hear and have sex and listen to rock and roll and take drugs, what would you do with your time?
My God, I don't know.
Ian likes that question too.
If we were free all of a sudden, what would I do? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't take a vacation.
Yeah, there'd probably be still problems with humans aggressing, maybe corporate corruption or all kinds of other issues in the world that we could focus on, I think, at that point. But I'd probably play more video games.
Yeah. Did you see, you know, there's a video game I should turn you on to, Ian, that someone turned me on to today that is kind of mind-blowing in its concept. It's not a great game. It's kind of a text-based, looks like an old floppy disk game off of an early Apple, I think, intentionally. But the premise of this game is that there's a revolution and a totalitarian government is installed, and you are at gunpoint the editor of the local newspaper, and you get all these headlines coming in, and you have to sort them, and you have to pick the ones that are state-friendly. But there's some way, yeah, but if you play the game and they have your family held hostage and they're going to kill them if you don't make the paper more successful.
And, how awful.
But there's some, and I didn't play it for long. I played it to that point.
It's a text adventure, like where you're typing north, south.
You're not typing. You're pulling things with the mouse from one side of the screen to the other.
I see.
And you have to pick the headlines that will make the state look better.
God.
But there's some way of playing it to where you can secretly get part of the military on your side and overthrow the totalitarian government. But I didn't get that far.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting. How awful.
I just can't believe someone made that game. There used to be a similar game for like Palm Pilots that was, it was a drug dealer game. Did you ever see that one?
I have not. Yeah, I have not.
Basically running around a park selling drugs and trying to avoid the cops and getting ripped off.
That sounds entertaining.
Yeah, it was as entertaining as a text game could be.
Well, that sounds like a more entertaining concept. I mean, if I was really, you know, in real life being, you know, held at gunpoint and told that I had to forward the interests of the state. Gosh, I don't know. I might just tell them, you know, just go ahead, shoot me, please.
No, it's so weird. It's like, I imagine that most video games are based on a plot of something that the creator wants to do in real life but can't, so he does it in a game. You know, whether it's shooting the North Koreans or having sex with the Martian women or whatever it is, it's something he wants to do. I'm wondering who made this game that thinks, wow, it'd be kind of neat to be forced at gunpoint to edit the status newspaper. It's probably someone who works in television and hates it or something, you know, or works
probably,
in the paper and hates it.
Probably. I mean, how terrible would that be? I would not want to work to forward the state. My goodness, how unprincipled.
Yeah. So why isn't there more sex activism in Liberty, and why don't people talk about sex more in Liberty?
I wasn't aware that they didn't. I know that you know, Stephanie Murphy, who you had on a couple weeks back, I know she does.
Yeah, but she was blushing. She was blushing when she was on this podcast.
Was she? Why?
So was Stefan Molyneux. Because I was asking them really rough questions.
Really? Interesting.
She was great. She was great on that. But
interesting.
Yeah.
It's not that I mean, I think there's liberty activists certainly have sex, you know, amongst each other, amongst You know, I mean, it's like any group of people that, spend a lot of time together, the drama flies for sure. I don't think it's not talked about. I think that probably we're just busy. You know what I'm saying? Busy talking about other things, busy talking about, cop blocking and filming cops and the state and depression and tyranny and going to jail and all that good stuff. I think there's just a lot of material. I know that, they said, I've been told, I see it too, that there's definitely, there's more men in the liberty movement than there are women.
What's the male to female ratio of Free State Project people there in person?
I can say that here in Keene, right now, I would say that it's 60-40.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
60 men, women, 60 yeah. men and 40 women?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Like, there's maybe a few more guys than girls, but
that's not a sausage fest.
No, it's really not. I've heard that it used to be, but it doesn't really seem to be that way anymore. To an extent.
I thought it was like 10 to 1 men to women, the way Ian keeps saying we
need
more.
Maybe it's... What do you think, Ian?
Where? Sorry, I wasn't...
Here. Go ahead.
No, just it's not testing. Like that at all.
I know. Anymore. I thought it was, though, because you've pled for women to move there, but...
Oh, well, I don't know when that was, but
these days
it's pretty good. I mean, yeah. I would say that it's probably about on par, maybe still a little more male, like 60-40, but there's there's sometimes when like frequently over at the Keene Activity Center or it's Social Sundays, sometimes we'll have 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Freedom Fiends audience.
There have been times when I've been the only guy in the room.
Right.
Freedom Fiends audience is so largely male from the email we get and the callers we get on the live
right.
show that instead of starting a shrine of female listeners, we started a shrine of feline listeners where people send in pictures of their cats listening to Freedom Fiends.
That's great. I'll have to send you a picture of my cat.
Oh, that'd be great.
My Emily.
They should be listening to Freedom Fiends though. Like they have it on their computer or something and you have to prove that it's a real cat and not someone pretending to be a cat.
Great, great, great. I'm sure Emily would like to listen.
Yay.
My pets love liberty.
Yeah?
Yes.
How many pets you got? What do you got?
I have two pets. I have a cat named Emily and a little chihuahua named Isabella.
How do they get along?
They get along wonderfully. They're real good friends. They keep each other company.
Oh, wait, a chihuahua or a chinchilla?
A chihuahua.
Oh, I thought you said a chinchilla. That's why I was how do they get
She's
along?
About the same size as a chinchilla, though. She's tiny. She's about 3 pounds.
Did you know that dogs are literally the same species as wolves?
No, I don't think that is quite exactly the case.
It's absolutely the case.
Well, I know chihuahuas are actually descended from fennec foxes.
Huh.
Yeah, which are canines. They're all canines. I mean, think about it. How do you have Izzy, my chihuahua, and then, a 200-pound Great Dane? Like, how do you get that? No, they're all descended from different branches of the canine family.
That's not what I read on Wikipedia. Canis lupus. Subspecies. They're all subspecies of Canis lupus. Dogs
interesting.
And wolves.
Interesting. Yeah.
A dingo is Canis lupus dingo. And a dog, all house pets, all dogs, except maybe your weird brand, are Canis lupus familiaris, which is the wolf that you are familiar with or the house dog.
Oh, well, I mean, what's it called? Why can't I remember what this is called right now? The Breeders Association,
they want to think they're all special in some
perhaps that's it, but they actually say that chihuahuas are descended from fennec foxes. And if you look at a picture of a fennec fox and if you look at a picture of my Isabella, they look exactly the same.
How do you spell chihuahua?
C-H-I-H-U-A-H-U-A.
C-H-I. Go ahead.
H-U-A-H-U-A.
Okay. I got to see what the internet says about this. I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm. You'll see.
Foxes, eh?
Mm-hmm. Fennec foxes.
I think that's a rumor because...
I look it up.
I'm looking on Wikipedia, which some would say is not the place to look, but Wikipedia's been getting better. They've been getting more accurate now that they have.
I love Wikipedia. I learned so much from Wikipedia. Yep. Like, if I know nothing about a subject, you know, I just go to the Wikipedia page and, you know, at least I know a little bit of something about it. So,
well, there's nothing. The word fox does not exist on the Chihuahua page on Wikipedia.
Fennec Fox.
How do you spell that?
F-E-N-N-E-C. Fox. Put in your Google search bar, Chihuahua Fennec Fox.
I am.
He doesn't believe me.
It's the first thing that comes up is an article called A Crazy Theory on Chihuahua Origins.
Well, the Breeders Association, I don't know why I cannot remember what it's called right now. My dog has papers from it. They actually claim that
the first 10 articles that coming up all have the word myth or fact or it's some variation on that.
Look at a picture of a fennec fox. Yeah. And then look on my Facebook page and search for Isabella Voluntarius and tell me they don't look alike.
Well, I look at one of my cats, I look at it, and then I look at a lion and think they look a lot alike, but that's kind of wishful projection, I think.
They do. They're little lions. They're cats.
I know.
They're cats.
And, you know, if you die in your house alone, they will eat you. So,
oh, that's terrible. I don't believe that.
I talked to a guy who worked for crime scene cleanup crew, and he told me that is absolutely true in his experience.
What? No.
Yep. They love you, but hey, animals need meat and people are made of meat. If you die in your house, your dog probably would not, because dogs are so bonded to a person, but cats aren't.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wouldn't like to think that my Emily would eat me if I died.
Yeah. Dogs are pack animals, and you are the leader of their pack when you have a dog and it's bonded with you.
Right.
Cats just think you're warm and feed them.
Cats, you know, cats in the wild, you know, they have their pride, they have their family, and
yeah, but it's not a pack thing like dogs. Like
right. Interesting.
Yeah. And cats will bond to one person. We have three cats. One of them will be with my wife or me, and one of them really prefers her, and his brother really prefers me. But, you know, if I'm not here, the one that prefers me will hang out with her and vice versa.
Hmm.
We're just a food supply for them.
Right. Yeah. I'm surprised that my Chihuahua never became a source of a... a sort of a hunting target for my cat. I don't know. I don't know. She never
that's
was.
Because you feed your cat.
Right.
And you know, the reason.
I feed my cat well.
The reason cats bring you dismembered birds and you ever have that happen? And
I have never. No, my cats have always been indoor cats.
They do that. And the reason they do it is because they think you're such a good hunter because you leave for 8 hours a day, you come back and you always have food. They think you're hunting. They want to reward you for being a good hunter. And the reason they remove the head and the feet is because those parts don't taste as good. They're preparing it to be tasty for you and bringing you the tasty parts.
Well, that's quite considerate. That's very nice.
I think we're at the end of our time here, unless you got some closing statements or arguments or pet praises or something.
Closing arguments of what?
I don't know.
Of cats eating their people?
Yeah. Or anything. You got 3 minutes. Go.
Gosh. You can't put me on the spot like that, Michael. Come on now.
All right.
What? Make a suggestion. Well, you know, if people are interested in our activism out here, I highly encourage
Where can they
them.
Find you? Where can they find Freak, you on
freekeen.
Internet?
Freekeen.com.
Spell that, please.
FREEKEENE.com.
And what can they find there?
Oh, they can find all the news and, you know, updates on Keen activism and also, other events in Keen, obviously. It's a news site.
Pumpkin Fest.
Pumpkin Fest.
That looks awesome.
Absolutely.
I really like that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully this year they will not be driving the Bearcat through it.
Ugh.
You heard about that, right?
Yeah, I've been following that closely. And mm-hmm. I found out my town's had a Bearcat for as long as they've had Bearcats. And they don't do much with it. I'm sure they could at some point and would not hesitate to, but yeah, they just pull it out and make themselves look big in parades in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Lenco rep, the Bearcats are manufactured by Lenco, and Lenco actually sent a rep out here to the city council meeting to, you know, make sure their sale got closed. The Lenco rep said that Keene had the most passion of any town that they'd ever been to. They said that no one had ever stood up to the Bearcat before. So, I mean, Keene, you know, this is where it's at. This is the epicenter of liberty.
So basically he's like, I tip my hat at you unkempt hippies for fighting a good fight against us that we won anyway.
Yeah, pretty much exactly what he was saying.
The owner of the Bearcat company has a blog that's called, Ian, what's it called? Like Christian conservatism and God or something like that.
Jim Massery, conservative Christian citizen.
Yeah, I went on his blog and told him he was a bad Christian. And it stayed up for at least a few days. I don't know if he deleted it eventually, but.
Good. Well, I'd actually written an article that said that if I mentioned that if he'd lived in the time of Jesus Christ and if he manufactured the cross that Christ was crucified on, you know, would he be able to live with himself? So he never got back to me on that. But
who would Jesus drone?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool,
man. I would say he's a bad Christian, too.
Yep. It's been groovy having you on here. Thanks for coming and chatting.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yep. And thanks, Ian, for providing the tubes.
Sure thing, man.
And chiming in. Rock and roll, man.
Thank you. Anytime.
Worms.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. All with a rotating guest... on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.